The headlines: Iran's president warns against the Zionist plot to divide Sudan. Thousands of protesters once again take to the streets of Tel Aviv. And Britain's railway workers vote in favor of further strike action in a new ballot amid a long-running pay dispute. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisum Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's president has warned that Zionists and their Western backers are pursuing the policy of dividing Sudan after they have failed to do so in Syria. Ibrahim Raisi made remarks in a meeting with the Syrian foreign minister Faisal Maqdad in Damascus. He added that the resistance axis has hobbled the Zionist regime and defeated its expansionist and occupationist policy. Raisi said that the people of Sudan and the rest of the Muslim world must be watchful of Zionist plots. Iran's president added that the unity among the Muslims of the world, reiterating that Iran's call on Muslims to be united.
Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi has attended an economic forum in Syria for Iranian and Syrian businessmen. He said that the two countries are determined to expand trade and economic partnerships, stressing that currently the bulk of trade exchange between Iran and Syria is unacceptable and should increase.
The will of both governments is to expand economic relations and eliminate obstacles in the way. This visit to Syria will constitute a positive turning point in developing relations with Syria, and you will see its impact on the economy of the two countries and the region.
This forum reflects Iran's and Syria's support for the private sector aimed at enhancing economic relations between the two countries. The viewpoint of presidents of both states was that such cooperation should be based on integration for the interests of the two nations.
Syrian and Iranian businessmen thanked their countries for the newly signed economic agreements. They said the war in Syria had blocked it from attracting investors, calling for the establishment of a joint bank, currency exchange companies, and an increase of air flights between the two states. Many of their requests were already dealt with, according to Iran's Minister of Roads and Urban Development.
Agreements signed recently aim to facilitate investments for businessmen. Agreements included establishing a joint bank and insurance system, as well as modifying tariffs on imports and exports. Good agreements were also reached in the transport sector. We will continue building the railway linking Iran, Iraq, and Syria for passengers and later on for goods.
On Wednesday, Iran and Syria signed an agreement on a long-term comprehensive strategic cooperation, as well as memorandums of understanding in the fields of oil, agriculture, rail and aerial transportation, free trade zones, earthquake reliefs, communications and information technologies. The Iranian president's visit to Syria has initiated a new phase of economic cooperation between the two countries. Both states are determined to upgrade mutual trade ties to reach the level of their strategic political relations. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
We were earlier joined by political analyst and university professor Said Mohammad Marandi for his take.
President Raisi's trip to Syria strengthens this new status. Syria, which has been badly damaged and hurt as a result of the dirty war led by the United States and its allies, has been suffering tremendously as a result of these barbaric Western sanctions. And in the past, the Iranians have helped the Syrians defend their sovereignty. But I think one thing that the Iranians and the Syrians neglected was to strengthen the economic relationship. And this trip was to rectify that. It was carried out to rectify that. So hopefully we're going to see increased trade and business and investment going on between Iran and Syria. That will further strengthen West Asian countries and their integration. It will further marginalize the Israeli regime, and it will make it more difficult for the Biden regime to continue its occupation of one-third of Syria, its illegal occupation. And it will also make it create a greater incentive for the Turkish government to withdraw. from northern Syria, especially because Turkey, especially as Turkey has so many problems.
Jordan's foreign minister says Syria should soon be able to return to the Arab League, warning, however, that many challenges still lie ahead. Ayman Safadi says Syria has enough votes among the group's 22 members to regain its seat. He added that Syria's readiness to resolve the country's years-long conflict would help it win the support of other Arab countries and to end Western sanctions. The Jordanian minister said the sanctions are a major impediment to launching a major reconstruction effort in Syria. Arab ministers are expected to meet in Cairo on Sunday to discuss Syria's return to the fold. Several Arab have stated, including Saudi Arabia and Egypt, that they have already re-engaged with Syria through high-level visits and meetings. And the head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says the country plans to step up production of yellow cake to 50%. Mohammad Esami made the remarks as he inaugurated a yellow cake production facility in the Iranian capital province of Yazd, central province of Yazd, that is. He said the country also plans to make 10 uranium mines operational by the end of the current Iranian year. Yellow cake is a type of uranium concentrate powder that can be processed into enriched uranium to make fuel for nuclear plants. Iran says that its nuclear activities are purely peaceful, only meant for energy and medical purposes. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of Tel Aviv and other cities across the occupied territories against the Israeli cabinet's judicial reforms. The rallies were held despite Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu putting the controversial reforms on hold a month ago. The rallies were the first major ones since the regime's establishment officially opened the summer session earlier this week. Protesters blocked central traffic arteries and highways in Tel Aviv. They also gathered outside Israel and the residence of Isaac Herzog in Al-Quds as the country homes ministers in Tel Aviv. Similar demonstrations have been held since the judicial overhaul plan was presented in January. It seeks to give the Israeli cabinet more control over the judiciary. Employees from a major Italian telecoms operator have staged a strike against unbundling of the company. Max Civilli reports.
On Thursday, about 6,000 employees from the Italian phone carrier Wind Tre walked out of work in protest against the management's decision to spin off the firm's network assets into a separate company. Wind Tre is the third largest Italian mobile operator with about 20 million customers and the second largest fixed line operator with almost 3 million subscribers. The industrial action had been called by Italy's three largest trade unions, CGL, CISL and UIL, against the unbundling deal, which unions and workers say is the prelude to mass layoffs.
We have to stand united against this spin-off. Breaking up companies always leads to detrimental consequences for workers. The best case scenario is that we get further stripped of working rights. The worst is thousands of layoffs.
The spin-off of telecoms operator Wind Tre will pave the way for the sale of a majority stake in the grid company to Swedish private equity firm EQT. Unionists say Wind Tre will shift some 2,000 workers out of a total 6,500 workers in Italy into the network venture.
Sta cambiando il modello industriale.
The industrial system as a whole is shifting towards a new paradigm in the communication sector, which features separating the management of the network grid from that of services. This way, Italy will further lose control on its strategic assets, and many smaller companies will kick in, exacerbating job insecurity in the country.
Job insecurity is rampant in Italy. According to statistical agency Eurostat's figures, Italy has the second lowest employment rate for young workers in Europe at about 30%. Also, Italy has no minimum wage but protects workers through collective agreements, which often remains a dead letter for people on precarious contracts. Meanwhile, Italy's government has scrapped an anti-poverty benefit that goes under the name of citizen income, replacing it with a more limited inclusion check for qualifying households starting from January 2024. Prime Minister Meloni argues that the citizen income, which helped about 4 million people last year, costs too much and discourages people, especially youths, from looking for jobs.
Personally, I have been forever looking for a dignifying job, but the only things I'm offered are badly paid long-hour jobs. The citizen income should have been amended, but not scrapped altogether.
Nearly half of workers aged between 30 and 34 in Italy have an income between 8,000 and 16,000 euro a year, an income bracket that ranges from absolute poverty to near subsistence. An increasing number of Italians are leaving the country in search of better opportunities abroad. Max Civili, Rome.
Britain's RMT trade union says railway workers voted in favour of another strike action in new ballot. The union says these strikes are part of the long-running pay dispute between the operating companies and the employees. Thousands of railway workers in Britain are planning a strike on May 13th. The RMT has rejected the latest pay offer from train companies. It said that the workers' vote to send a clear message to the employers. RMT says the employees are angry at the very real fact that employers should recognize the fact. The UK has several waves of industrial actions across the various public and private sectors since last summer. Workers demand inflation matching rises. Inflation in Britain has seen a 40 to about 10% rise. People in Britain are questioning the costly coronation ceremony of King Charles III amid a cost of living crisis and nationwide strikes. The ceremony is to be held on Saturday, and it will be funded by the government. Estimates of the cost of the coronation is as high as $150 million. The activists say that the cost is a slap in the face of millions of people struggling with the cost of living crisis. They say the coronation is a celebration of hereditary power and has no place in modern society. A recent survey shows most of the British people want the coronation to be funded by the royal family itself. A spokesman for the Buckingham Palace has argued that the occasion attracts huge global interests and more repays of expenditure will happen as it goes on. Russia has accused the U.S. and Ukraine of masterminding a drone strike on the Kremlin, which Moscow says was aimed at killing Vladimir Putin, the president. The Ukrainians have denied the accusation. We discuss this in our news review program. Let's take a listen.
Russia has accused the U.S. of being behind a drone strike on the Kremlin, which officials in Moscow say was aimed at killing President Vladimir Putin. The Kremlin spokesman said Russia is aware of the plot, knows that Washington is selecting the targets, and that Ukraine is merely implementing them. Dmitry Peskov added that Russia is considering various options to respond that meet the interests of the country. The U.S. dismissed Russia's allegations, saying Moscow's assertion was a lie. Russia has already blamed the attack on Ukraine, describing it as a failed terrorist act. Kiev has rejected the accusation. Meanwhile, Russian missiles targeted the Ukrainian capital, Kiev, again. Ukrainian officials said the southern Zaporizhzhia region and the port city of Odessa were also shelled by the Russian military. Hardy Schlanger, spokesman at the International Schiller Institute, joins us from Potsdam, Germany. We also have Don DeBar, who's an activist and commentator, joining us from Ossining, New York. Gentlemen, welcome. Hardy Schlanger, first over to you. So you have this incident that has happened, and it's interesting the type of reaction that we've had from Ukraine and in turn the U.S. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that this is true, what Russia has accused the U.S. of, that it was the plot that it devised and for Ukraine to have carried it out?
Well, it's important to realize that Ukraine would not undertake such a risky act as this without clearing it from the United States first. So the idea that the United States had no idea or that they have plausible deniability is possible. But I don't think if this came from Kiev directly, which it appears to, that this would have been without the knowledge of the United States. Now, one of the strongest evidence of Ukrainian government involvement has been the targeting in Kiev of the May 9th Victory Day celebrations in Moscow, which of course are highly symbolic for Putin and the Russian people, the victory over the Nazis. And given that you have neo-Nazis inside the Ukrainian security and defense forces and in the government, this may be something that they do wish to target. A man named Anton Gerashenko, who is a spokesman for the Interior Ministry of Ukraine and one of the co-founders of the Mirotvorets hit list. I think this is at least plausible evidence of Ukrainian involvement, just as Biden's comments that the Nord Stream pipelines will not be open was used by Seymour Hersh in his targeting of the Biden administration as responsible for the sabotage of the pipelines.
And what do you think, Don DeBar? Do you agree with Hardy Schlanger there? What would be the real intention of if the U.S. was to have orchestrated it and for Kiev to have carried it out?
I'll further amplify, first of all, the reference to Biden and the Nord Stream pipeline. Biden says we're going to take out the Nord Stream pipeline. Boom, the Nord Stream pipeline is gone. Biden, before he mentioned the Nord Stream pipeline, had said essentially Putin should not be allowed to be president of Russia anymore. That was in like March of last year. But further than that, it's the policy of the U.S. government. There's proposed legislation to make this official, but you have what's called the Helsinki Group inside the U.S. government, which has members of Congress and others in it, whose purpose, the avowed purpose of the U.S. government, is to decolonize Russia. By saying that, they mean to break it up into like 10 independent countries of each other. They've announced the regime change effort from the very beginning of the addressing of the Ukraine situation by that group. And there is pending legislation now in both houses of Congress introduced last week that says, in essence, it is the policy, in fact, the states, it's the policy of the United States to make sure that Ukraine wins this war, recovers all of its lost territories, quote unquote, which includes a naval base of Russia's that's been there since the end of the 1700s, which means essentially a declaration of war on Russia.
Okay, thank you so much for that, Don DeBar, activist and commentator. Hardy Schlanger, thank you. Spokesman at the International Schiller Institute. Thank you to you both. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Thanks for tuning in.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
The pro-Israel lobby groups in the West have over the years made desperate attempts to silence and tame people, university professors, and independent global news networks over their coverage of Israeli regime crimes against Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The Electronic Intifada wrote in this regard, a Palestinian-American teacher is planning to sue a Pennsylvania university after Israeli lobby groups pressured the institution to fire him. After being fired again from another college months later, he believes he is now blacklisted from teaching. Karim Tanous taught for 2 years as a professor of business on tenure track at Cabrini University, a private college near Philadelphia. He regularly criticizes Israel and its ideology, Zionism, on his personal Twitter account. But I didn't preach this at the school. I didn't even talk about it, Tanous told the Electronic Intifada, adding that he consistently received high evaluations from his students and was known for making the material engaging and accessible. However, the Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia and the Jewish Community Relations Council sent letters to the Cabrini administration last year seeking to censure Tanous and have him fired over his personal tweets. Israeli lobby groups such as the Jewish Federations of North America and its local chapters have been prominent forces in the push to shut down criticism of the Zionist regime on campuses. It is also a major force behind the promotion of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, IHRA, highly controversial definition of anti-Semitism, which conflates criticism of the Zionist regime on the one hand, with anti-Jewish bigotry on the other. The IHRA definition has become Israeli lobbies' key weapon in North America and Europe to enforce censorship about the Zionist regime's crimes against Palestinians. The Federation demanded that Tanous should face consequences for spreading what they said and claimed anti-Semitic and anti-Israel commentary and making posts in support of the destruction of Israel, according to a recent article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Music.
Meanwhile, a Twitter account and website with a history of relentlessly harassing Palestinians and other advocates for Palestinian rights also began targeting Tanous. The blacklisting group StopAntisemitism.org named him last July as Anti-Semite of the Week. A month before he was fired from Cabrini, the website encouraged its followers to email the university administration and submit an ethnic discrimination complaint against Tanous. During a meeting before the semester started, according to Tanous, the administration seemed to believe the Israeli lobby group's claims. But he explained that his tweets in defense of Palestinian liberation are not hate speech. It's all political speech, and you can't call political speech hate speech. Nevertheless, the college terminated him in August. Now, Tanous's lawyer, Mark Schwartz, says that they will file a lawsuit on the grounds that Cabrini discriminated against Tanous and violated his First Amendment rights. After being fired from Cabrini, Tanous then started a teaching position at nearby Gwynedd Mercy University in January. But he was notified within his first week on the job that he was being fired. In its termination letter to Tanous, the college's human resources department said it had received a complaint from a community member who shared an article written about you suggesting that your tweets were anti-Semitic. The administration claimed that Tanous could be biased against students due to their religious beliefs, though it made no allegation that he had discriminated against students in any way. After being dismissed by Gwynedd Mercy, Tanous said, "It fired my lawyer up even more. Being terminated by two universities shows that I am being blacklisted for my speech, and that's against my civil rights," he said. Schwartz said, "Their lawsuit will have precedent, and that's he is confident in Tanous' case." He cited the case of Stephen Salaita, who was fired by the University of Illinois at Urbana campaign in 2014 for social media comments criticizing the Zionist regime's assault on Gaza that year. Schwartz noted, Salaita said that he was unemployable, and this is now the case with Karim. Salaita sued the university for breach of contract, alleging administrators acted under pressure from pro-Israel donors, later settling the case. Schwartz also noted the recent reversal by Harvard University of its decision to withdraw an offer of a fellowship to Kenneth Roth, the former director of Human Rights Watch. The school's dean, Douglas Elmendorf, blocked the fellowship in December due to pressure, Roth charged, from pro-Israel donors unhappy about Human Rights Watch criticism of the apartheid regime. But amid outrage at what was widely perceived as censorship of criticism of the Zionist regime, the prestigious college reinstated its offer to Roth in January. Schwartz told the Electronic Intifada, Harvard had the good sense to reverse itself. Maybe some of the inferior universities will give pause. A university is supposed to be a marketplace of ideas. What happened to Tanous is just intolerable.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Dear ladies, welcome to another episode of your own program, Muslim Lady. Well, wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and everything is just going so smoothly. I am Asma. I have the honor to be your host for today's episode. And in here, we have Sister Zainab with us. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to your program.
Alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And again, it's a pleasure to be here with you and with the audience, of course. So as for today, we're going to talk about selflessness of women. In all the stories that we have read in our lifetime and in all the movies that we've watched, actually most of them, not in all of them, we see that women are more prone to being selfless. They forget about themselves and the benefit of others. They do that because they think this way they're going to be practicing kindness towards others. In a way that sometimes they are going to forget about themselves totally. And this happens, unfortunately, in many cases in real life. Now, I don't know if I should call it unfortunately or fortunately. Now, this is my question. How far should we go in selflessness?
I would disagree with calling it unfortunate. But yeah, it is unfortunate when you have a total forget about yourself. You don't take care about yourself, your health. And a woman is like designed in a way that she is so caring about others. And like as per the 2017 study by the University of Zurich, they reached a conclusion that female brains are hardwired to reward kindness. So basically, they love to be kind, they love to be nice, they love to be, you know, being selfless. And that's because when they have a good feel chemical releasing in their bodies as per science, like...
Since they're mothers.
Yeah, if they have dopamine...
comes with the word mother.
Yeah, like if they have this dopamine chemical getting released in their bodies, this gets released when you're selfless. And that's a feel-good hormone. And it was seen in the case of women, like when they, especially mothers, when they do things selflessly for their family, for their children, they actually have this dopamine chemical release.
They would appreciate themselves for that.
Yeah, their body appreciates it, actually.
This is a
feel-good chemical. Allah, Allah, Subhanallah, Allah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can listen to us at parstoday.com/en. If you have any suggestion, our email is englishradio@irib.ir.
In Islam, we have so many things about selflessness. Like in Surah Hashr, verse number 9, it says that they prefer others over themselves.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. They are in need themselves, but they prefer others over themselves. And from their like internal desires of the nafs, they actually, like even in Islam, like Surah Hashr verse 9 reads, like a part of this verse reads towards the end, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, they give the immigrants preference over themselves, even though they may be in need. And whoever is saved from selfishness of their own souls, it is they who are truly successful. So Islam defines successful people as those who are selfless. So being selfless won't be counted as being unfortunate.
As an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, the health of a woman who is so selfless in the family is extremely important. If a woman does not take care about her own health, if she's not concerned about her own desires,
if she forgets about herself while sacrificing herself,
she
for
can't
others.
Effectively help others without taking care of herself. So like, to be helping others, you gotta be taking care of yourself. But at the same time, Islam is completely against if you become emotional doormats of others.
This is the point.
Do
not play the scapegoat.
Exactly. So you got to be selfless. But again, I would use the same term. You don't have to be emotional doormats of the people. Selflessness is important, but it has to be balanced. It has to be managed.
And it has borders, I guess.
But again, in terms of mothers, we see this bottomless. We see this.
That's just for mothers.
And if mothers were not like that, we would have not been actually realizing any of the blessings, like many of the blessings.
Of course, like, and kindness. Of course.
Exactly. Like, we just had the blessing of the month of Ramadan. So how mothers, how women played a significant role in this holy month of Ramadan, or every Ramadan, not just, I would say, this particular year. Every year in Ramadan, women have a significant role. And it's the best manifestation of selflessness. Because before dawn, you are preparing meals. Until dusk, you are standing over there in the kitchen, cooking for others. And when...
washing the dishes while you're tired, while you're worn out. And then still, you have to take care of your family, do the cooking things. And, you know, it's difficult.
You know, I mean to say, when the iftar time is very close and there's this, you know, feeling of thirst and hunger, and sometimes even this, you know, sometimes people say that I'm about to faint right now. You lose your senses.
Exactly.
The same time, this woman, she spreads the sofra. She spreads
the
table.
The table, yeah.
Table lining, yeah, and then prepares food for others. She makes sure that everyone has iftar very nicely.
And she's happy.
She's the one who is very 10% concerned about herself. Her 90% concern is, did others eat well? So that's very important. Written something about that.
Yes.
It's a very small thing.
We can read it after the break.
Sure.
Welcome back, dear ladies. We're talking about how selfless women are, and is it a good thing to carry that on into different extremes? And then Sister Zainab said that she has got a poem.
Regarding the same dedicated women you know, work from dawn to dusk, and even before or after that, to make sure that everyone has a good realization of the month of Ramadan. It's not just confined to Ramadan, but like they do keep on doing this throughout the year as well. So especially these mothers, women who take care of others from dawn to dusk and before and even after that. And they're very dedicated and make sure that everyone realizes the beauty and importance of Ramadan. And Allah kind of gives her miraculously this energy, this courage to carry out these things. So I'll read out these some lines which kind of define this, whatever I discuss.
We're all ears to hear that.
Yeah. Prepares everything before dawn. For iftar makes this, that, and so on. Knocks every room to call upon. Makes sure all observe Ramadan. Has headache, but she goes on. Has backache, but she carries on. Has mental ache, yet moves on, makes sure all observe Ramadan. Things mess up, again tries on, cares for all without holding on. On one hand cooks, and on the other recites Quran, makes sure all observe Ramadan. Washes utensils when all are gone. She takes in thorn, for I yawn. For having mom, I ask myself, Ramadan to Ramadan, فَبِأَيَّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ.
So beautiful.
I was dedicated to all those mothers, all those women who selflessly try and make things so beautiful for us. Even I as a mother now realize this beauty while doing what kind of, patience, what kind mm-hmm. of courage Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala provides us with and has provided all the mothers with. And this becomes so easy when you start cooking and when you start doing, making ready things with this beautiful and sincere intention. Oh Allah, only for your pleasure.
So according to Islamic perspective, being selfless is something that is so highly valued. And then as being women, since we have more of passion and feeling toward our loved ones and dearest, and of course, not just that, even sometimes as a teacher, toward your students, if you're a woman, being a teacher, then you would share that much of love with your student as well, or in different parts of life. So selflessness is a good and valued feature. But as we talked about, it shouldn't go to an extreme where you lose yourself in a way that you kill yourself for others,
Yeah, because health, again, has been given a lot of importance in Islam. If it was not so, we would have not had the narrations regarding even foods, which food is better and which is not, which is healthy for you and which is not. So health has also a great importance in mm-hmm. Islam. And in health, Islam has not defined gender.
Exactly.
So women have to be taking care of their health, of their selves. And selflessness has its own place.
Yeah, and since the word selfless is just in our brain, actually, equals mothers, because they've been so kind and so selfless throughout our lives, I should right now in here thank all the mothers and my own mom as well, and thank them, because without them, maybe life was a foolish story. Because only with the kindness and selflessness of mothers, we could see the passions and the kindness of Allah reflected in their behavior. So this was all the time that we had for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female, and made us into nations and tribes, so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, so Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history, just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
In the limelight.
French President Emmanuel Macron has warned against Europe being caught up in crises that are not ours and has called for Europe's strategic autonomy. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story in an editorial and tells us more. On his flight from China and after returning to Paris, French President Emmanuel Macron gave a series of interviews with the media and elaborated on the idea of European strategic autonomy in many of its aspects. He said Europe must reduce its dependence on the United States and avoid being caught up in the confrontation between China and the United States over the question of Taiwan. He urged Europe to become more committed to achieving strategic autonomy so as not to become a vassal of a major power amid the global crisis. He also stressed that Europe doesn't want to get into a bloc versus bloc logic. This is obviously a result of Macron's long-term observation and reflection. In addition, this is a view representative of Europe's insightful people in the face of the continent's current complex and severe internal and external situation, pointing out a relatively objective and rational path and direction in line with Europe's own interests. In the eyes of normal people, a European leader's emphasis on protecting European interests should not have become news. But in the United States and the West, many people act as if this has stepped on their tails and show a strong sense of discomfort and even fury. Such an abnormal reaction confirms Emmanuel Macron's statement that strategic autonomy is Europe's struggle. Macron's reasoning is not complicated and his attitude is clear-cut. From the perspective of a bystander, it undoubtedly helps Europeans to figure out their understanding of their own interests and the boundaries of European-US relations so that they can make the right choices at the crossroads. The numerous criticisms over Macron's attempt to divert people's attention weakened the impact of his successful visit to China and prevent this European introspection ignited by Macron from going any deeper. These criticisms and accusations are very cheap and not worth refuting, but the amplified noise created by them does create pollution. Some people want to construct a false Europe in public opinion to cover up the real voice and interests of Europe. The strongest criticism of Macron comes from the United States, as well as Central and Eastern European countries. This is not difficult to understand, but deserves vigilance from Europe. Central and Eastern European countries are at the forefront of the Russia-Ukraine conflict and have particularly severe security concerns, which has led to more radical foreign policies. But the dissatisfaction of the Americans with Emmanuel Macron reveals the true face of the United States. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio released a video of over 2 minutes in which he repeatedly questioned whether Macron speaks for all of Europe and stated that if Europe is not going to pick sides over the Taiwan question, the United States will focus on the threats that China poses and you guys handle Ukraine and Europe. Marco Rubio also demanded that France or Europe provide an answer quickly. These blatant statements cannot be called criticism or opposition anymore, but are Washington's completely undisguised bullying and coercion. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. Emmanuel Macron has flown into a storm of criticism after he said Europe should not become a vassal and must avoid being drawn into any conflict between the United States and China over Taiwan. The French president made the remarks in an interview on his plane after a 3-day state visit to China, where he received a red carpet welcome by China's President Xi Jinping, a show of pageantry that alarmed some European China watchers. Speaking to reporters from Les Echos and Politico, Emmanuel Macron said Europe should be a third power in the world order, along with the United States and China. While the comments reaffirmed Macron's long-term goal of strategic autonomy for Europe, namely avoiding military and economic dependencies, his remarks on Taiwan stoked anger and alarm on both sides of the Atlantic. According to Les Echos, Macron said, "Do Europeans have an interest in speeding up on the subject of Taiwan? No. The worst of things would be to think that we Europeans must be followers on this subject and adapt ourselves to an American rhythm and a Chinese overreaction." Emmanuel Macron added, "It would be a trap for Europe, now it had developed more autonomy since the COVID pandemic, to get caught up in crises that are not ours. If there was an acceleration of conflict between the American and Chinese duopoly, we will not have the time nor the means to finance our own strategic autonomy, and we will become vassals. Whereas, we could become the third pole in the world order if we have a few more years to develop this." Emmanuel Macron said the need for Europe's strategic autonomy was now widely accepted, and there had never been such an acceleration of European power as in recent years. He also emphasized the risk to Europe of the US Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, a $369 billion green subsidy plan, and overdependence on the dollar. However, he said Europe had reacted with great speed to come up with our European Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, referring to plans to boost homegrown green technology and the production of critical raw materials. And Macron suggested the talks with Xi Jinping had been useful in confronting complacency on the part of China with regards to Russia. The goal of the dialogue with China was to consolidate common approaches over the war in Ukraine, Macron said. According to the website Politico, the Élysée Presidential Palace checked Macron's quotes before publication as a condition of granting the interview and insisted on the removal of lines where Macron had spoken even more frankly about Taiwan and Europe's strategic autonomy. In a social media post linking to the Politico interview, the U.S. Republican Senator Marco Rubio said, if Emmanuel Macron spoke for all of Europe, then the United States should consider focusing its foreign policy on containing China and leave the Europeans to handle the war in Ukraine. Marco Rubio, who lost the Republican presidential nomination to Donald Trump in 2016, said he supported U.S. aid for Ukraine, but if Europe was going to pick sides over Taiwan, a rethink was in order. The Indian news website First Post has also covered this story and tells us more. The White House said it remains confident in the U.S.-French relationship after French President Emmanuel Macron distanced himself from United States policy on Taiwan and warned Europeans not to be American followers. Emmanuel Macron's remarks to journalists from French business daily Les Echos and news site Politico came after he was hosted for a state visit by China's Xi Jinping. White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said the Biden administration remains comfortable and confident in the terrific bilateral relationship we have with France. Spokesman John Kirby cited President Joe Biden's personal relationship with Emmanuel Macron and said the two countries are working together on so many different issues, including naval operations in the Asia-Pacific. Washington and Paris are partners in a concerted effort by all of us in this vast alliance, this network of alliances and partnerships, John Kirby said. In his interview, Emmanuel Macron said European countries, among the closest allies of the United States, should not get caught in the tense standoff between Beijing and Washington over the fate of Taiwan. China has vowed to regain control of Taiwan, while the U.S. government has pledged to help Taiwan defend itself. French President Emmanuel Macron, who discussed Taiwan with Chinese President Xi Jinping on Friday, 7th of April, warned against Europe being caught up in crises that are not ours, which prevents it from building its strategic autonomy.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.